I think we should very, very quickly have a roll call for the record. This is Marilyn Cade as the chair speaking. The VC has just concluded an executive session regarding VC strategy. We will now be starting the transcript for the call. And if I can, Chris, I'd like for you to just read a roll call.
Yes, hello there. Chris Chaplow speaking. We've got 17 members on the call. Zahid Jamal, Marilyn Cade, Chris Chaplow, Mike O'Connor, Janet O'Callaghan, Jim Baskin, Mark Sloan, Fred Feldman, Constantine Klanderos, Adam Palmer, Barry Cobb, Steve Del Bianco, Suzanne Kawaguchi, John Nevitt, Ron Androff, Neil Blair, and Philip Shepherd. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chris, John Berard's here as well.
And Philip Corwin as well.
Oh, thank you.
Fantastic. I don't see you on the meeting. So Phil Corwin, wonderful, and John Berard.
And Chris Martin as well, thanks.
Yeah. And I don't see you on the, okay. So we.
I don't know that I have the Adobe Connect for that.
You don't? Okay. Let me just add you to the transcript, Phil Corwin, John Berard, and Chris Martin. Is there anyone else who is on the call who it has not been announced? Okay. What I'm going to do is move all of the other administrative topics aside and turn the call over to Steve to focus on policy issues. If we have any remaining time, we'll come back to administrative issues. If not, we'll do those by email. If I might, please, Steve.
Thanks, Marilyn. In response to what members said at the meeting we had in Washington, we're not going to use this call to talk about the policy calendar, but instead deep dive into a couple of policy topics. The first one we'll cover quickly is the Accountability and Transparency Review Team. We'll then talk about the applicant guidebook, the much-awaited guidebook, particularly what the board did on vertical integration and cross-ownership. Then talk about security, stability, and resiliency, where we have an internal team, and then Adam Palmer can give you a review his initial draft that we're putting together for the ICANN SSR budget. And then other topics like the IDN fast track comments that ICANN has solicited, who is, and the team that's come together for that, and maybe high security TLD zones. All right, folks, the notion as chair here is that I want to tee up the issue and then try to invite the folks that want to comment. Our first topic is the Accountability and Transparency Review Team recommendations. They came out last week for public comment that would be closed by December the 3rd, and it'll be discussed extensively in Cartagena. I don't find any formal positions or statements on the BC website with respect to this Accountability and Transparency Review Team. So we'll be going at this fresh. And as Vice Chair for Policy, I firmly believe that BC should comment on this, both in terms of the deadline at December 3rd and in Cartagena. I can summarize what the ATRT recommendations are by saying they're pretty reasonable. They're so reasonable that I don't think that ICANN's board chair will object, even though they had been objecting to many of the things that the ATRT team was doing. In fact, I think they're maybe a little too reasonable, and that the BC could well press harder on the board to implement some of these recommendations quickly and not drag their feet for the next 3 years until the next Accountability and Transparency Review. The BC also was active on the Improving Institutional Confidence team, and Marilyn on there as well, and all of their recommendations sort of addressed in this ATRT recommendation to say that they ought to follow through on what the IC did. There's nothing in their recommendations about metrics to hold the board more accountable and transparent. And there's no definition for what is the public interest, despite the fact that the recommendations use that term on 11 different pages. So I would summarize it by saying that they're vague on wanting ICANN's board to have a better skill set. And they've come up with a handful of very small technical recommendations. So at this point, I would take questions about their recommendations, but also volunteers who would like to work with us to come up with the BC's reply to the ATRT recommendations.
Steve, it's Marilyn Yeah, I'm gonna ask you if you would to take a note. Maybe when you send out, if you send out an email follow up, would you ask the members who posted comments under their own names, both on improving institutional confidence, and if they've posted comments already, would you ask them in particular to join any drafting that might give you a core of people?
That's great. And those would be individual comments on the team's work, because they solicited comments starting in Brussels on accountability issues, but also IIC, which has gone on for the better part of 2.5 years. I will ask.
Okay. I just want to offer two additional comments. The President's Strategy Committee, Improving Institutional Confidence, proposed that ICANN must have an independent review mechanism over the board, that it is not good enough to just have the board reviewing itself. And there was a lot of discussion about that, and I would volunteer to work further on that particular section, because the legal counsel and the outside counsel are urging the board to avoid having this outside independent, sort of accountability process. The second point that is good, I think, in this document that I think we would want to support is that I mentioned this for members. There's a call that the GACs get it together and decide what consensus is, because right now what the GAC wants to do is when they have divergent views, they want to include all this. Here's what we believe is consensus, and then here's all this other points of view, which might be from one GAC member or two GAC members, and you should treat all of these equally. And it's very challenging for the board. There's another point about timeliness, but I think the recommendation that the GAC needs to work with themselves and with the board to establish an agreement on what consensus is for GAC advice going forward. My suggestion would be that we would want to support the call for that, but would note that it has to be going forward and not retroactive. But I'll volunteer to work just on that one as well. But let me turn this back to you.
Marilyn, this is Constantine.
Yes, Steve will continue this from here. Thanks, Constantine.
Constantine, this is Steve. One follow-up on Marilyn, and I'll turn it over to you.
I'm sorry, I cannot hear you very well. I hope that you can hear me well. I just wanted to say that ETNO has provided comments in all the phases of all the relevant consultations in the Improving Institutional Confidence and also the Accountability and Transparency Review Team. So most likely we'll also provide comments as ETNO this time. But you can put me in that group, but not as a primary drafter. I can put some ideas, but not as a primary member. Thank you.
Thanks, Constantine. With respect to Marilyn's comment on review mechanisms, the critical question is whether the review mechanism would be binding on ICANN. That ended up being the big controversy. ICANN pushed back very hard on that. So did some members of the review team that are outside of ICANN. So consequently, it is not in their recommendations. So whether their recommendations speak to review mechanisms, they left out the very hard question on whether a review would be binding. It would be interesting to see where the BC comes out on that. Is there anyone else who wants to get in the queue, take note of a comment they filed before, or volunteer to be on the drafting team for our comments? Okay, we're going to move on to the next topic, which is the guidebook. We were assured by staff that the guidebook was going to be released on Monday evening, November the 9th. It was not. It did not come out, and I think I know why. It's because staff is probably crashing right now on redrafting most of Module 5, where the registry agreement lives. Section 2.9 of Module 5 is where the registry agreement speaks to things like vertical integration and cross-ownership. And many of you saw that just 2 days ago, the ICANN board released the results of their vote on VI, and so we'll come to that in Module 5. I'll say that at our October meeting in Washington on the 12th of October, we solicited volunteers from the D.C. who could divide and conquer when this guidebook came out, so that several people could attack different modules of the guidebook and then be prepared to discuss with the broader membership where the guidebook changed and how that new guidebook compares to the business constituencies' established positions and preferences on the guidebook. We had hoped to do that starting on today's call and then schedule another call for next week to do a deep dive on the guidebook. As all of you know, they missed their deadline. We don't have much to say about it, but I thought I would quickly review who's on the five modules, and then we could go into a more detailed discussion on the vertical integration aspect. On module one, Barry Cobb and Ron Androff will do the initial analysis. On module two, for evaluation of applicants, it's John Nevitt, Adam Palmer, and Zai Jamil. On module three, for dispute resolution, we have John Berard. Module four, which is string contention, Ron Androff. And module five, the delegation of new TLDs, including vertical integration and rights protection mechanisms, Fred Feldman, Barry Cobb, and John Nevitt. This might be a good time for me to ask for volunteers who want to assist these five teams to dive into the guidebook. I'll take a cue. Any other volunteers for?
Can I ask a question? On the VI issue, I know there's been a bit of an exchange, and I was just going to post myself between Ron and Philip about, having lost, blah, blah, blah. I have some thoughts about the rigor of the code of conduct that I think would...
Let's wait on that. We'll do a discussion of VI next. The first administrative matter...
I didn't know if you included VI. Sorry.
Yes, VI will be part of Module 5, but I'll take that, Mary. That maybe you want to do you want to volunteer to be on the Module 5 deep dive team?
I intended to ask a question about it. I'll reserve my question till then and get out of your way.
Okay. Anyone else want to assist here? We're a little thin on Module 3, which is dispute resolution amongst applicants. It's not dispute resolution about second-level domains, but about applicants.
Steve,
could also like Ron Anderson could use some help on Module 4, which is where we come up with string contention issues.
Steve, Chris here. I was going to offer to help on the one where Ron's on his own. Is that four?
Fantastic, Chris. That's string contention, module four. Thank you, Chris. Anyone else help John Berard on dispute resolution, which is module three of the guidebook?
This is Mikey. I'll join that one.
Fabulous. Thank you, Mikey. So now we have at least two people in every section, and... if there's no other questions on the five teams, I'll thank everybody who's volunteered to help with that. As soon as the guidebook comes out, our plan was within 5 days of the release of the guidebook, we could organize a call for the entire BC membership where you volunteers would walk through your first look at the guidebook and start to form the basis for BC comments. We'll stick to that, but at this point, we don't have any idea when that guidebook is going to come out. Any other comments?
Can I just verify? Sorry, I'm just going to verify then that for administrative purposes, we're sticking with the 18th, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time for a call. At this point, Chris should go ahead and get you a bridge, et cetera, and then assuming the guidebook comes out, you'll keep the call unless it comes out the night before, right?
Well, let me ask that great question, Carol. Let me ask the members of the team. Is it worth having that call? You've got less than 5 days to review. What would be in a reasonable period of time to do your review for a call?
This is Ron.
Yeah, Ron, go ahead.
I would say that, let's be realistic. This is not a brand new book. It's just there should be the modifications, except for that, what I intend to agree with you that Section 5 is probably going through a full rework, but all the rest of it is probably just a slight modification. So from my part, I believe that 5 days is enough time to give the constituency back good feedback.
Hey, Dave, this is John Nevitt. Could I get in the queue?
Go ahead, John.
Thanks. Yeah, I think 5 days would probably be enough, especially if you're just focused on the changes between the last round of the applicant guidebook draft and this round. I don't think Section 5 is going to be a total rewrite, just the VI sections, which aren't that extensive. And my only personal problem is that I have a conflict on the 18th at that time, so I could send a note for you or any way I could help, just let me know.
John, this is Steve. I'll respond to that by saying that the first look at the changes was something we had hoped to accomplish on today's call, even with 2 days' notice. I believe we should schedule our next call to do more than just a first look at the changes, but to talk about what the BC position ought to be on the new guidebook. So that's why the five-day review period might be necessary. If we think 5 days is sufficient, that means we'd need to see the guidebook over the weekend in order for you guys to have 5 days to prepare for the November 18th call. So if it doesn't come out by, say, close of business Monday, we will probably need to push that 18th call a few days out. But as Marilyn says, let's stick with
it. Let me push back on that a little, Steve, because I guess I'm – what's the point of going through things that have been in there for four or five rounds already?
There is not. But when you review the changes, John, after you say you've gone through 10 minutes reviewing the changes in Module 2, the next step is that the BC has to start to draft its position on what that changed module looks like. If the BC is going to take a position on the guidebook, we want it to be substantive and sectional specific.
So, you know, if we're going to go over old territory already, that's something that we should discuss whether that's worthwhile use of resources or not.
Hold on. I have a question. Steve, it's Marilyn. Wouldn't you only review old territory if the team reviewing it is proposing a change that would strike an existing position?
I think that's right. We're all too busy, John, to go back over the grounds that have already been covered. So
yeah, that sounds great.
Very specific. Yeah, I have a feeling we'd be very specific. And most of you know that Module 5 will get most of the attention. That's where the rights protection mechanism obligation will live.
Dave, I have a question. The rights protection, yes, but which of those modules is going to cover the compliance enforcement? Because I think we're going to have to also put some attention, if the module doesn't give us the opportunity to do that, we're going to have to put some attention to this issue of adequate funding and support and attention to the enforcement and compliance issues?
Yeah, that's a great overall comment that we'll have to make. Even though it's not something that would show up in a guidebook, it's a comment to ICANN about enforcing what's in the guidebook. And that's probably a good segue to this vertical integration and cross-ownership resolution that the board adopted on the 5th of November. As most of you probably already know, the registry agreements the board voted not to do any restrictions at all on cross-ownership in either direction or vertical integration. They laid out in their resolution their rationale for doing so, and they cited the lack of consensus coming out of the working group as sort of opening the door for the board to do what they felt they wanted to do. Most of you know that they've included in there that the registry agreement, which is in Module 5 of the guidebook, the registry agreement will have to include restrictions on, quote, inappropriate or abusive conduct, unquote, and with specific restrictions on the misuse of data and violations of what is called a registry code of conduct. And the misuse of data, it's going to be essential for us to not only talk about enforcement of that, but to articulate the kinds of misuse that business constituency members are concerned about. I gave an example in a conversation with Philip just the other day that if a registry sees all of the strings that people are asking for and type in traffic that don't exist, that registry has the best domain-tasting data anybody could ever want. And without any restrictions on cross-ownership or vertical integration, a new TLD operator, a new registry, would know exactly what strings are getting type in traffic, and they would therefore find a way to monetize those strings. That seems to me to be one of the things we were very concerned about when we opposed the five-day grace period being abused for domain tasting. So I can bet the BC will probably have something to say about that. I only give that as an example of something we may need to articulate when we say these are the kinds of misuse of data or violations of code of conduct that ought to be addressed. They would do auditing about these prescriptions and that they would impose sanctions. And this gets to Marilyn's question of where will the resources, the leadership, and commitment come from to do the compliance, to do auditing and impose sanctions on these restrictions. So I'd be glad to be on this.
Yeah. Can I get in the queue, but take a cue from others as well?
Yeah. Anyone want to get in the queue on the VI discussion? Marilyn, go ahead.
I have extensive experience in the industry of working with industry to develop codes of conduct, and I have two comments, and I don't think Sarah's on the call, but I know John is. Several years ago, John and Sarah and a few other people from industry worked in a coalition to deal with the anti-competition, the anti-competitive issues related to the .net and the .net and .com decisions that ICANN had made to give them unlimited approval to retain those license to operate those registries. We met with DOJ, we met with FTC, I talked to Antitrust Council. The idea that ICANN is proposing that they retain the right to refer complaints to anti-competition authorities is toothless. There is the anti-competition authorities have no resources to deal with complaints at this level, and they basically won't take them. So we have to assume that that has no teeth at all. It is absolutely worthless. And ICANN knows that. There was a meeting between Joe Sims and Antitrust Counsel that I had been working with and John Jeffrey at the time, and they acknowledged they knew that had no implications, but did suggest to us the European antitrust authorities might feel differently. Go back to codes of conduct. I think Philip and Ron have commented on this as well. I think we are going to have to pay attention to what the code of conduct is, and it has to be enforceable. It has to be resourced. And we have to see it, not just have a promise. And we have to know that there are compliance and enforcement staff that are hired and trained before ICANN goes forward. They're not delivering on enforcement and compliance now. They're going to be overwhelmed if they don't start now to build a good enforcement and compliance team and hire them and get them prepared well in time before they launch.
I have a question for anyone on the call. Does the code of conduct, is that a new concept, or is there a current one that governs registries that operate today? John?
Yeah, it's not a new concept. There's a registry code of conduct for .biz that was in their first contract. So there have been one, but there's no uniform one. There's just some historical references to codes of conduct for registries.
John, able to circulate that to the BC list, circulate the code of conduct as much as you can find, even if it's just from .biz.
I'll send it to you, and you can circulate it, and I'll look for some others.
John?
Appreciate it. For the comment?
I want to ask a question after Philip.
Thanks, man. It was just to say, of course, happy to continue working on this whenever BC Group does it. And also for me, I thought actually one of the interesting things, which I think was a BC suggestion that we saw taken up, at least in that board resolution, was this whole concept of graded sanctions. And I think that's something that we also need to pay attention to in terms of making sure that they are something that can indeed be implemented, and we will see implemented in a sensible way.
Good idea, Philip. Marilyn?
John, is that code of conduct enforceable? And who enforces it?
Yeah, it's part of the contract, so it's enforceable as a contractual requirement, and it would be under an ICANN requirement to enforce it.
So,
but John, would that thing still exist, though, now that they've moved over to the new contracts as created?
No, it was just an example of one in the past. My point is that there is some historical reference to a code of conduct, so we'll wait to see what's in the new applicant guidebook and the new Mod 5 and see what code they're looking at. But it would be part of the contract is the point. It was in the past and would be in the future.
Any other comments?
Steve, this is Adam. I was just going to comment that I will help you out when we talk about what the potential abuses are. I think we need to really think through ways that the registries might be able to, or other not well-intended registries might be able to game some of that information. So I'll be happy to join the team to think through that.
Yeah, Adam, thank you, Adam. And please begin now at drafting the most specific language you could come up with for how someone in the position as a registry could, in fact, use that to do misuse of data or abusive conduct or inappropriate conduct. We're going to need to be specific to have any hope of making a difference.
I agree. I'll send you over some bullet points then.
Anyone else?
Steve, this is Barry. Yes, thank you, Adam. That would be great. I think one of the things that we missed in the VI working group is the ability to, or the visibility into understanding what would really go on with some of these abuses that have been brought up. Within the working group, we only got as far as identifying some of the abuses, but we didn't go through the task of actually analyzing. And one of the gaps that I see is really understanding, I guess to a degree, the technical nature of what really goes on behind the scenes, and then understanding that would help put some of these abuses in context for what could happen versus what may or may not happen. So I definitely welcome that. And then, Steve, just one other point. At the beginning of the VI discussion, you had mentioned the thing about competition authorities and those kinds of things. I kind of draw back or recall back on what Mike Pelage had brought up in the VI working group, and within their proposal, they were very adamant about referring to competition authorities, but within the overall working group, there was concerns to Marilyn's point that, yes, they wouldn't have, competition authorities wouldn't have the resources or bandwidth to handle these types of cases. I think this really does draw attention to a larger concern as I understand it, and I would refer it back to Mike Pelage for the details, but he had pulled out of other existing registry agreements that refer issues to a competition authority for a different type of matter, and I don't remember specifically what it is, but if we certainly feel that that is that's just not going to happen, then it's why should it even be within the rules to seek out competition authorities if we think it's dead on arrival? Thank you.
Barry, this is Steve. I think that is an opportunity to point out that the Governmental Advisory Committee, or GAC, submitted a letter in late September to the ICANN board indicating their position on new GTLDs, and it includes, on page 3, several paragraphs on what the GAC thinks about VI, and they do suggest that they're open as a competition authority to do reviews because they have regulators around the world, so they don't actually commit to being scaled up to take the problems, but of course they welcome the idea that things would be referred to them in terms of competition authorities. The GAC is ambiguous, though, on the general question of whether to permit VI or cross-ownership. On the one hand, the GAC said that they look forward to discussion. They noted that there's strict rules of the guidebook. Governments generally support restrictions on vertical integration as an important device for promoting competition. The GAC notes the Solop and Wright study, but then the GAC goes on to say, however, we recognize that if market power is not an issue, then the ability of a registrar with technical, commercial, and local expertise could benefit competition and innovation. They go on to say that an exemption might be available for community-based TLD applicants to be able to cast their net more widely and secure a registrar partner with the necessary expertise to help them out. So the GAC was somewhat ambiguous, like the idea of exemptions, though it's not exactly clear how that compares with the board's position of saying there are no restrictions at all. I'll take
Steve,
a few. Are there any other comments?
Steve, can I get in the queue to comment, first of all, about the authority of the antitrust, anti-competition organization?
Before you do,
Fred, I'd like to get in the queue as well, please.
I'm sorry, say that name again.
This is Fred.
Fred, anyone else? Marilyn, go ahead.
I am happy to have a private conversation with the relevant deputy DOJ who has this is Christine Barney, who was previously at the FTC. I'm happy to have a conversation with her. My last conversation with her is, no way will DOJ be able to accept this kind of referral from ICANN. Now, that's a while back and before she was in this position, but I'm happy to have a conversation with her. My conversations with the FTC go as following. There is one relatively non-senior person who from the FTC who attends the ICANN meetings, not considered senior enough to be appointed to the WHIS review team. And the FTC is excessively stretched on dealing with complaints of this nature. They will entertain complaints, but they don't commit to have resources to deal with it, and their budgets are being cut significantly. The idea that they're going to be a resource, low. I'm not going to comment on antitrust authorities and other anti-competition authorities in other countries, except to tell you that of the 15 African countries I asked, none of them said that their authorities could receive complaints on this.
Thank you. I will just note that we are much better off articulating the kinds of abuses and the kind of conduct that needs to be in the code of conduct so we can solve this as a contractual matter. I don't believe we want to count on antitrust authorities as a way to really police registry abuse.
Got it.
You know what I mean? And then, Fred, you're next.
I think that really exploring abuses is important, and one of the things that we might consider as we explore this is what type of information is sort of key to actually
I'm
making...
I'm sorry, Fred, I'm not hearing you at all. You're breaking up. Could you please repeat that?
Can you hear me now?
That's better.
Okay. I'm sorry, I'm on a poor line, but my thoughts were with respect to the abuse, it's probably important to understand what the implications are with respect to the abuse and the information that must be available to police it. And we should consider what information should be transparent and available to the public at large so that everyone is able to police the new namespace and identify abuse.
Brad, that's a great point, because it would be a crime if a lot of that information was only available as an additional registry service for which everyone has to pay. So a lot of information needs to be turned over to the community in order to really understand whether there are abuses. Anyone else in the queue on Module 5 and VI? Are there any other general comments preparing to review the next guidebook? Good. We'll move on to what I hope will be the second to last policy topic today, and it's the security, stability, and resiliency. I get to ask for comments on items that affect SSR, and all of you know that the affirmation of a commitment to establish a review team on SSR. In fact, Jeff Brueggemann is on that review team. So we decided on October the 12th at the DC meeting in Washington to create an internal working group open to any member that wanted to join, which would focus on SSR issues. Adam Palmer, Bill Smith, Scott McCormick, Jeff Brueggemann, Leigh and Greg from the Financial Services Roundtable, Lee and Greg, Mark Sloan, Martin Sutton, and Jim Baskin had all volunteered and joined us on a first phone call. And then Adam Palmer drafted a 4-page position on what the BC could consider to say about SSR plans that ICANN is making for fiscal year 2011. He circulated that to our internal working group on Tuesday, the 9th of November, and Adam's on the call. I'll have him walk through the key concepts there, but just let me put this in context. The BC would attempt to have our internal group over the next several days come to a consensus about the BC's position on fiscal year 2011 SSR plan, and then we would put it to the full membership so we'd have our 14-day review period before we go into Cartagena. We are not trying to shoot for some particular deadline or a public comment submission on this, but rather to be able to comment on it in Cartagena. And once we have a position, whether it's late or not, we're going to send it into staff. Adam, do you want to talk a little bit about your draft on the fiscal year 2011 SSR plan After that, we've got a Jeff Brueggemann to talk about any activities on the review team for SSR, and then we'll turn to the high-security TLD zones. Adam?
Yes, thank you, Steve. And I first also wanted to comment that on November 3rd, the comment period for SSR comments actually did close, and ICANN posted yesterday a summary of those comments. There were some individual business operator comments submitted. The ones that are especially, I think, thoughtful would be to read Microsoft had some interesting comments. ICANN posted a summary of all of those comments yesterday. I will circulate a link to that. I'll send it over to Steve. So that's worth taking a quick look. You can get a summary of what the comments
Adam,
were. Yes.
Adam, yes. Just post it directly to the list because we're running out of time.
Okay. All right. Very quickly, please take a look at the comment that I drafted with the idea that this is to get us started. I basically broke it into three core areas of concern. And I would say in length and scope, the comments that I drafted, the positions, I think are similar to the major concerns that others have expressed already. But I tried to emphasize the lack of input that ICANN has solicited from the enterprise business community, the lack of compliance oversight, and the lack of adequate security. So those are the three core areas that you'll see. I introduced it basically by trying to emphasize that the BC doesn't want to encourage mission creep by ICANN, but that we have to encourage ICANN to recognize that this mission of public trust that it keeps talking about has to require enforcement of compliance obligations by the contracted parties and has to include greater collaboration with enterprises. So there is an introduction basically summarizing that. I also put in some information. The first section talks about adequacy of the measures to prevent abuse. You'll see in there I included some information from Symantec's Internet Security Threat Report that talks about the growing threats, the increases we see, persistent DNS-based threats, 100% increase in malicious code signatures from last year to the current year. So some of these things that I hope get ICANN's attention, and to make clear that the BC represents high-value targets which are being hammered by abuse, which is created in many cases, I think, by an environment that ICANN fosters through its lack of compliance. So I try to basically raise those comments. Please, I make a note in the draft that was posted. We could really use some assistance from Jeff or others who may have had experience talking about ICANN's scope of its role within the policy mission parameters. I think we need to make a slightly stronger argument than I have already on why it's appropriate for ICANN to address some of these issues. Again, I made the argument that it creates the environment and it has a duty based on that, and it's not a outside of its scope to have a greater enforcement of compliance. The collaboration section, I think, kind of speaks for itself, talking about the urgency and need for them to include business to a greater degree because we're the ones getting hit by all the security threats, and that a lot of ICANN's efforts so far seem to be focused on its core stakeholders, which are registries of registrars, but exclude the people who are actually the victims of these crimes, which are the enterprise and companies. Lastly, the last section, which I'll talk about very quickly, was just, again, emphasizing that ICANN basically has this plan, but they don't have any real significant effort towards filling the vacant compliance slots or that have, I think, some of them which have been vacant for several months now. And with the launch of all the new GTLD in the near future, it seems that they're trying to maybe perhaps pass off some of the enforcement of compliance obligations to other the contracted parties themselves, or it's not clear how they're going to enforce this, who's going to have oversight for that. So this was the area that I tried to highlight lastly, was that they have to get this in order. They have to emphasize enforcement of compliance duties. The best plan in the world, I basically said, isn't going to be effective if they can't enforce it. So I also left blank our conclusion right now. I hope others will have input into how you'd like to summarize this. My goal here, again, was just to get this organized, get us a good start, try to highlight the core areas, and leave it now for the wider group to have input. Thank you.
Adam, thank you. You circulated on Tuesday to the eight folks that are on this internal working group team as a first draft. So it had not gone to the entire BC list. I just forwarded to the whole list since you were walking through the draft on the call. But what we'd like to do is have the drafting team at least start with the eight of us that joined you on the call, and hopefully we can come to consensus on the draft and circulate it to the broader membership early next week, so the 14-day review period gets us done plenty of time for Cartagena. So I say that to suggest that, Adam, I would hope that the eight folks that are on the team can reply to you with specific edits. I might invite you to hold a call for this early next week, and then if we make a change to those edits, we'll dump them into the 14-day full member review. Again, this eight-person internal team is open to anyone who wishes to join, and if any of you want to comment on the draft number one that Adam circulated, I've just sent it around to the whole BC list. I'll take a cue.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I want to be in the queue, but I heard somebody else first.
No, it was Jim Baskin trying to get in the queue. I'll go after you.
All I was going to say, Adam, is I will get you some comments. I wrote much of the early rationale for why business users matter, and so I'll get you something on that. I also probably know more about ICANN's scope of authority than ICANN itself knows, since I actually helped set it up. And I'm happy to debate what their scope of authority is. I'll give you some language on that.
Go ahead, Jim.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, I'm in Geneva for this week and next week at a study group 2 meeting, but I will be trying to get you some answers back. I like the beginning where you did get into some of the issues that I think I brought up about making sure that we really cover the true issues of security and not just the ones that have to do with the registries and registrars themselves.
All right, if there's no further comments on the SSR plan, let's move to the second element. Jeff Brueggemann, are you still with us on the call to talk about the SSR review team under the affirmation of commitment?
Chris, I don't have Jeff on the call. Do you see on the call?
Okay, I thought I heard Jeff's name, so we'll skip over that. And the only other topic I had on SSR was ICANN's proposal to do a voluntary certification program for high-security TLD zones. Now, Mike Pallage is the chair of an internal advisory group that ICANN has formed. Mikey O'Connor's on it, Greg Rattray, I believe. And also Mike Rodenbaugh. Would any of you like to summarize the HSTLD debate at this point?
This is Mikey. I may be the only person on the call.
Go ahead, Mikey.
The status right now is a little bit cloudy because the board passed a resolution at the retreat that said that I can doing this from memory, so I may get it wrong, but I can basically will not directly issue or support a certificate or a seal of this type, which
right, makes it voluntary, but your advisory group is working on what a voluntary certification and verification program might look like.
Right. So what the board said, Steve, is that basically the board cut the legs out from underneath the advisory group, and so Mike Pallage is working pretty hard right now to find out really what the status of the advisory group's recommendations would be. And until that gets cleared up, I think it's safe to say that the HSTLD advisory group is kind of on hold.
Okay. I appreciate that. I submitted an individual comment on it. I know that Financial Services Roundtable did as well, and we've circulated those to the membership. So I hope that if we have any updates on that, staff told me that they would not have their responses ready until middle of December at this point. So they're not even going to reply on this prior to Cartagena. Are there any other comments on HSTLDs?
I have a question for Mikey and you and others. You know, ICANN seems to be totally adverse to its responsibility and wants to outsource all responsibility. If Do we as a business community have a concern that, you know, we're going to hand this off to competition authorities who are going, we have no resources, we're not going to intervene, so it's lost in limbo. We have ICANN saying we're not going to provide any kind of accreditation on criteria. I'm really wondering where we are with trying to just say to the organization, you are accountable. You have to do this. You can't keep skipping it down the road.
And Marilyn, Steve, I mean, I can certainly say that in my concern, I don't think I want them to certify HSTLD because I think they're trying to commoditize something that is not a commodity quality. So we may not want them to take advantage of that. So, I mean, that's a debate we're going to have if the BC is going to come up with a formal position on the HSTLD plan. I'll just kind of close the discussion so we can get Mikey and Mike Pelage and others on a call on this.
Well, this is Mikey. Let me just also point out that within the advisory group, there's a fair amount of work yet to be done on some of the basic positions. I would not characterize the advisory group as complete yet, and so that there's a long way to go on this one, I think.
Thank you, and it's not part of the guidebook. And it's not something for which we have a deadline to submit comments. So this would be an ongoing discussion, isn't it, Mikey?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, great. Marilyn, is there any more time for policy to cover the other topics?
I think if the members are able to, we have 15 minutes before the bridge goes away. If the members are able to stay, I think you should keep going, and it'll be transcribed.
All right, thank you. We're in the other section, and I will bring up at least three other topics and take a list. Other topics for policy include ICANN is asking for comments on the IDN fast track for country code top-level domains. I find no existing position or statement from the BC on that. I do note that there have been discussions now that the fast track for country codes put generic IDNs at least a one-year disadvantage, in the sense that country codes in Arabic will be out at least a year now before we'll have a GTLD in Arabic, with its attendant sort of disadvantage at first mover and market share. So we have a very short window on which to comment on IDN Fast Track. Is there anyone on the call that feels that the BC should have a statement or position to submit on IDN Fast Track? It's due December the 17th.
What do you mean by a position? Could you clarify? We like it. We applaud the fact that there's a recognition of the importance of IDNs to the 67% of Internet users today who do not speak, write, or recognize English?
Marilyn, I would just add to that that by applauding the idea of focusing on IDNs was great, but we continue to be disappointed that country code operators were the only ones who given a fast track to service IDNs. Something
not,
like that.
Well, okay, we can have a conversation. I'm not going to support saying we oppose country codes since those are national level. If the point would be that the BC believes that generic top-level domains in IDN characters must be a priority because 67% of the world's users, blah, 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 and that we think that ICANN must adequately address the WHOIS issues and other kinds of issues, in, as well as determining when a ASCII operator can apply for IDN equivalents. If we wanted to say something like that, I think you'd have a working group.
And I think that would make sense. Anybody else on the call interested in discussing this? We have a short window if we're going to try to get in by the December 17th. Go ahead.
Steve Phillip here. I mean, just as a reminder, I mean, you're right, there was no specific past position paper on this. There were comments made in some of our other papers in general terms on UTLDs. Our position, as you know, had been, yes, in favor of IDNs, and secondly, in favor of simultaneously moving towards IDNs, you then end up with two sets of rules, whatever they are.
Right.
Of course, we're in a position today where we are precisely in that bad situation where we have two sets of rules. So I think you know, to some extent our comments need to be now focused in mitigating any harm that may result.
Right. I appreciate that. Let me move on to the second one, which is who is. And I know Susan's on the call, and I think that Bill might be. But we have another internal working group in the BC on matters surrounding who is. Now, the affirmation of commitments called for a review team on who is, and our own Susan Kawaguchi of Facebook has been appointed to that team, and Bill Smith of PayPal is the independent expert to the who is review team. Susan and Bill, do you have anything to report to the general group on activities planned between now and at Cartagena on the who is review team?
This is Susan. One phone call, and that's it, and we're not meeting in Cartagena except for a two-hour meeting with remote participation. So Bill and I both pushed hard to get the whole team together in Cartagena because we didn't want to lose the time and the momentum, but didn't work that way.
And Susan, keep the whole BC informed as soon as you have visibility into the activities of your team and when they might be calling for input from the community so that we can be prepared.
They're definitely thinking of the San Francisco meeting, of having time with the whole community at the ICANN meeting. And at that point, we probably will be calling for input. It took us a little while just to get a chair, but we've got one now.
Okay. So. Well, keep us informed and let us know how we can support you in that role as well. As you know, the BC's been so active on who is over the years, and also particularly active on getting council to fund studies of who is, fact-based studies that will inform policy going forward. I hope those fact-based studies will provide some help for you on the review team as well. I did look at the agenda for Cartagena includes quite a bit of discussion on those who is studies. Go ahead.
Steve, Susan, I think I have two points. So your chair, as I understand it, is Emily Taylor, and your vice chair is Kathy Kleinman?
It is. And up until really Monday night, it looked like it was going to be the reverse.
Yeah.
And then Kathy decided that she did not want to be – she withdrew her nomination.
That's probably actually, for those of us who have a long history of working with her over the years on this topic, that probably gives us a sigh of relief. I think I would just suggest you need to carefully read Emily Taylor's statement of interest and make sure she has fully disclosed who her funders and clients are.
I have reviewed them all, but I'll go back and look at Emily's.
And my second point, she has at least one client who is a CCTLD.
Right. She's pretty upfront.
She is, but I just note that my second question to you would be, I'm very disappointed to hear that the group is not meeting, and I'm also very disappointed to hear that there will be a full community debate in San Francisco. The only thing probably worse for our interests would be to hold the first one in Europe.
Well... I don't think we can delay it to Asia.
Nor do I think you should, but I think that message is more to the rest of the members.
Are there any other questions for Susan on the Who Is review team? I have one other topic, which is the joint working group established by the board in Nairobi to explore ways of supporting applicants for new GTLDs, applicants that couldn't afford an application. That working group has prepared a report, and they will be discussing it on council next week. It's booked for the council meeting in Cartagena as well. And that plan has something that does touch a position the BC has taken before. As Philip indicated, back in January of 2009, we submitted a position on the guidebook where the BC said that applicants for certain strings ought to probably have discounted fees if they apply for multiple translations or transliterations of that TLD string, particularly in IDNs. So we're on record with that position. I think that's the one Philip was alluding to on the IDN fast track discussion earlier. So that may be something we want to explore so that we can speak to that when the supporting of applicants comes up. Are there any other topics in general, policy topics, that BC members want to surface right now on this call?
Steve, it's Ron, if I can get in the queue.
Go, Ron.
This is Mikey. I'd like to get in the queue, too.
Okay. So Ron and Mikey. Ron, you're first.
Thank you. Want to make a point of clarification with regard to the last topic you were discussing. The issue of whether there should be support for applicants for TLDs because they may be in small markets or maybe third world countries versus whether or not one organization, one body should be able to have its IDN names in multiple languages. So it's a global body, so they'd like to have it in Arabic and in Russian Cyrillic as well as ASCII character sets. The first element, I think, is really important, and it's important we create the distinction between the two. As many people on the call know, we ran a top-level domain, and so we understand what it takes and the elements out there that are not necessarily all written into the business plan, but in fact are huge cost items. So the question really is, if an entity cannot afford to pay the $185,000 and all of the other costs that go with it, you have to wonder whether or not that entity can actually operate its registry in a way that will serve its community. So I really want to make sure that the distinction that we're drawing as the BC is that if someone's going to apply to manage a top-level domain out there, they have to have the financial resources to make sure that domain stays up and running and serves the community. And when it comes to the second element that you referred to, that Philip was mentioning, the idea of one community having the ability to have a lower price point to pick up those other names and serve that community, that's absolutely critical. So there's a real distinction between those two, and I want to make sure that that we all understand that.
Ron, you're absolutely right. There's a distinction, and the report that working group put together treated it as their main goal to provide, you know, charitable support to applicants who couldn't afford it. But there was a minority report in there, the entire subgroup that had a meeting in Brussels, and that subgroup did look at what we'll call bundling, particularly just to serve communities that wouldn't otherwise get TLDs, and in particular, those are IDN communities. Small linguistic community wouldn't get a TLD at all, particularly a GTLD, are the ones that would be supported by bundling or discounted fees. So I think that you're right, those are distinct topics, but they are both under the purview of this joint working group. Mikey.
Thanks, Steve. This is Mikey. I have two. Neither of them are terribly momentous, but I thought I published them both to the general list. The first one is that there's a council vote coming up, or at least a council discussion coming up.
A council.
On sort of the cross-SO collaboration type working groups and the context that those might be formed in. And Tim Ruiz published on the GNSO Council list a comment sort of opposing those. And my reaction to that was that I think that we really do need to see avenues for cross-SO collaboration being provided. I understand Tim's concern about processes falling outside of sort of the known parameters of things, but I would hope that you and Mike could support the idea that we really need mechanisms for cross-silo collaboration and figure out ways to put appropriate safeguards in so that we don't get runaway groups. So that was one for consideration, and then the other one that I threw out there was one that Dan Andrew published, and that was this notion that sometimes when registrars are shut down, the domains are moved from one country to another in the process of reassigning the names to a new registrar. And I wasn't terribly keen on that idea, it's not something that impinges a lot on me personally because I'm with a couple of the big registrars in the U.S. and it's unlikely that they'll shut down. But I thought it was an interesting issue to raise that we, as a business constituency, might not want to have the domains that we are using in our businesses suddenly shifted from one country to another without our ability to influence that. So those are just a couple that I threw out there for people to think about.
Good points, Mikey. Are there any reactions to what Mikey was talking about or action items, or is there anyone else that wants to get in the queue on policy matters?
Chris here.
Aren't the domains that we own totally portable?
What do you mean
totally
portable? I mean, we can move them to any registrar we choose, right?
Oh, sorry.
I assume that's John. John, the trick is that sometimes registrars fail, and when they fail, the names are moved to a different registrar. There are processes that give registrants a chance to intervene at that point, but they're pretty complicated and pretty hazy, and so I think a lot of registrants would wind up missing out on that and thus might have their domains shifted to a different legal venue, and then find themselves in an awkward position trying to get them moved.
But the same RAA would still apply, though, yeah?
No, because it's a new registrar.
Mikey, can I join the crew? Chris here.
Yeah,
go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting that I hadn't thought of it, but I've got domains deliberately in UK jurisdiction and thought of the possibility of that. But you would be aware, and then subject to a small time window, have the opportunity to transfer back to another registrar. Over.
I'd like to be sensitive to time on this, though. If we deep dive on this, it might be something better to do either on the board or on another call. Marilyn, how much time do we have left?
Well, you can take one more minute, but I have to go. The transcript of the call actually has to end, Steve. We're actually out of time. We need to wrap up. We've got 1 minute.
Back to you.
The bridge is going to be used for another purpose. You'll see the transcript. Steve, I think you ought to keep the call time on the 18th in any case. And if there are other policy issues you need to discuss, add 30 minutes to the call time on the 18th for the full membership. And you could deal with policy issues first and then deal with, members could drop off and you could go with your working session on the guidebook.
Agreed.
And that way people will have the transcript by then, and you can decide if there are other urgent policy issues you need to add. Is that all right?
Yes.
I want to thank all of you for joining. I know you may have questions, and, use VC-GNSO, the public list, for your questions, unless they have to do with the election strategy. Also, I have just seen an announcement from, I need to mention that you really, folks, need to vote on the charter. That election closes Friday night at midnight in your time zone, and right now we have 14 votes. We need more votes. We don't have a quorum, but we need more votes. There are 46 members. If you haven't voted on the charter, you need to vote. Please give that consideration. The election has concluded for the councillor elections, and the results of that will be announced tomorrow morning. And we are going now.
Thanks, Marilyn.
Bye-bye. Thank you all for joining.
Thank you.